Well, Miss Ann has wanted to talk with Ruth Reichel for years. I've been a big fan of her, and we found out we have something in common. We both have masters in art history from the University of Michigan.
And of course, you're both practicing exactly what you preach.
Exactly.
do a master's in art history, and then ask, would you like fries with that, sir?
Well, you know, there are others too, Ruth. I don't know what the association is between the visual arts and cooking. I do know what it is, basically, but anyhow, let's figure out. I mean, there's so many things we could talk about. You are editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, which is probably the most prestigious, or one of the most prestigious positions to be in. Your background is so rich with having been the restaurant critic for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. You're on every board, culinary board in the world. From your position, you can see what's going on. And you said in a previous conversation that you were shifting slightly the focus of Gourmet Magazine to meet what you consider to be the major issues in the culinary world today. Could you just talk a little bit about what you're doing at the magazine and what you think these big issues are right now?
Well, I think the first issue is I think people really need help cooking. I mean, the economy, we've been in a sort of restaurant economy where everybody was interested in the hot new thing and the new trend. And, now we're in trouble here. And I think that people are going to go back to cooking, and they need to know how to cook. I mean, I think a lot of people don't know how to cook anymore, and we're going to do a lot of basic encouraging people to cook. Our October issue has a big thing about butcher cuts and how to use these less expensive cuts of meat. I feel like this is a time for people who cook to rejoice that, you know, the upside of all of this trouble that the economy is in is a kind of return to the kitchen and to basic values. And I feel like for people who love to cook, this is the time to go out to people and say, you know, this is really great. Come back into the kitchen, feed your family, spend time with your kids growing food. Let's look at the positive side of this bad time that we're in. And so we're really spending a lot of time thinking about, you know, what is it that we can do to help our readers live richer, better lives.
Now, you also mentioned that there's a new ethics issue coming up to the fore.
Right. Well, we have spent a lot of time at Gourmet. When I first came to Gourmet 10 years ago, when I went to the staff and said, you know, we have a mandate to change the magazine, what should we be doing? And every one of us felt that the important thing was to start talking about where our food comes from and to talk about the farmers and to talk about problems that, you know, with the ecology and the environment, and to really try and connect people to the earth in a way that Epicurean magazines just didn't do. And we have done that to such an extent we used to do a special, what we called a produce issue, and then suddenly we realized that there was no point in doing that anymore because it was so much a part of our DNA that we were doing it in every issue.
Right.
And now I feel like everybody is aware of problems in the food supply and understands that, the farmers are important to us and farmers have become big heroes.
Celebrity farmers now.
Celebrity farmers, absolutely. And people, you know, really understand that they're, that the ecology matters and that we have to think about green issues. But I think that what's getting ignored a lot in this is the people who, the workers, the issues of fairness in food. I mean, we understand that there's an obesity crisis and that is partly a class issue in eating. But there are still real issues about the people who pack our meat and pick our tomatoes. And we really need to start thinking about how important it is that at every step along the food chain, there be an issue of fairness. And we're going to start paying attention to
now,
that.
Ruth, how do you marry that with the fact that, unfortunately, if people in the food supply business get paid more money, then what's going to happen is the price of food is going to go up, and that's a sort of a counterproductive thing for today.
Well, it that goes back to the issue of learning to cook. I mean, I think one of the things that is, I think one of the reasons that we're in trouble is that we think that food should be cheap, and you know, we pay less, a smaller percentage of our incomes for food than almost anybody else in the world. Food isn't cheap.
Like Michael Pollan says, pay more, eat less.
Well, I mean, that's right, and you know, I mean, it comes back ultimately. All of the cheap food that we have has a cost, and you know, it's a cost in obesity and sickness, and in there are social costs to it. And I think we have to start thinking of it in a bigger picture, and we have to start thinking maybe we don't have to eat meat at every meal. Maybe we have to learn to cook unprocessed food, because a lot of the cost of food is in the processing, and it goes back to learning to cook.
So you're thinking that it would be important to push people back to saying, eat things that are in season. Don't expect to have a good tomato in January, and just stop eating them until such time as you can buy them at the New York Green Market again?
Exactly, and learn to eat the things that, I mean, we eat so high on the food chain.
Oh, it's terrible.
We don't eat what we consider trash fish, you know. We only eat, you know, the fish that have eaten all the little fish. Well, maybe it's time for us to start learning to eat the little fish, learning to cook the less fancy cuts of meat, learning, going back to offal, which...
we eat a lot of that, actually.
Yeah, we love it. We love all the special
parts.
Peter's
English, like, you know, they grow up
like,
with that.
Like tongues and livers and kidneys and that kind of thing. And the difficulty is that it's hard to get those in the food chain. In fact, we buy beef liver, frozen beef liver from Whole Food Market, and... I'm not sure that they intend it for human consumption,
because it's
right next to the, it's right next to the dog food.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was fascinating to me to do this article about eating inexpensively in Paris.
Oh, right.
And I went over and, you know, did this and was eating in restaurants of these wonderful young chefs who are trying to serve food at a really affordable price. And what you end up eating are, you know, wonderful pig's ear salads and a tartare of beets and wonderful, you know, calves brains. And these are menu items that you just don't find in this country. And they're wonderful.
Because they wouldn't sell in this country without a lot of education.
No, they wouldn't sell now, but
people are educated to it.
Perhaps they will sell in the future. I mean, what do you think about this suggestion, Ruth? It's, you know, people have been moaning about gasoline getting to $4 a gallon, and you and I both know, and Anne knows without realizing quite so much, that when you go to Europe, it's quite possible to live in a civilized fashion with gas or petrol or whatever you like to call it, $12 a gallon, and food is probably, you know, not the same degree higher, but it's certainly a whole lot higher than it is here, and civilization doesn't stop.
No, it changes, mm-hmm. And it changes in a good way, and, you know, I think that the upside of this crisis is that we are going to have to start living more thoughtfully.
Now, do you see this happening in the restaurant scene as well? We did see that in London. There's a couple of wonderful guys who have two restaurants, one called Arbutus and the other called, what's it called?
Wild Honey.
And they told us, they said, we built our cuisine around inexpensive cuts of meat and things that are in season, and our objective was to keep everything on the menu for lunch. Now, it might sound like a horrendous amount of money anyway, but anything on the menu less than £15 for an entree, and we haven't seen that in the U.S. yet. Do you think we will?
Oh, I absolutely think we will. I think you're going to see inventive young chefs doing exactly what you see in London and Paris, and I think it's going to become a badge of honor for people who now say, oh, I love hot food and I'll eat anything, and to come back to, okay, eating anything means not just eating, you know, that far-out Chinese dish, but, you know, eating things that their grandparents ate.
Right. Pickled watermelon rind is coming back. I said to my husband...
I don't know about pickled watermelon, right?
I grew up on it. My grandmother always made pickled watermelon.
I mean, you can pickle just about anything, but that would not be close to the top of my list.
I mean, you are seeing it a little bit with, I mean, pork belly.
Oh, yeah,
which
well,
is the chicest dish in New York right now.
Oh, it's been in London for ages now.
Right, yeah. But, you know, 5 years ago, yeah. You wouldn't have found that on any menu in America.
No, you should have seen Anne and Peter tucking into a plate of charcuterie, tamarind in Bologna. every piece fatter than the next, and we ate the whole thing.
Oh, well. But, you know, Ruth, I think that the thing that's most startling to people is that we used to think of food issues as being something in underdeveloped countries, and we never thought of it as relating to our own situation. And now we've had so many food scares, and we've had such, as you said, an obesity problem, and the economy is so rotten. It's all coming home, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the ironies of we think of food issues as being in underdeveloped countries. In fact, those people who we used to think had food issues are, for the most part, eating more healthfully
right.
than people in our own country.
Right. Did you ever read this book called The Jungle Effect?
No. It's the health book.
Yeah.
Yes, I have it sitting here on my desk.
Well, it's about native diets and so forth, including the Amazon.
Yeah, the book I'm the most excited about right now, although I'm having a little bit of trouble getting through it, partly because I actually know the author. I used to play squash with him. This is by a guy called Dr. David Servan-Shriver, who at age 35 discovered he had a brain tumor. And not only that, he later had a recurrence of it as well. But he looks at food from a health perspective and says one of the reasons that maybe I got sick and a lot of people get sick is because of all this horrible stuff we ingest. And Oh, yes. He's got a whole diet section on these are the things to avoid, and these are the things you should concentrate on, which will give your body the best possible chance of being healthy.
I mean, it's interesting. We have an article in our November issue about a guy named Mark Castell, who runs the Cornucopia Alliance, which is an organic watchdog group. And he came to that because he was selling big farm machinery, and he got very, very sick and found out that he was deathly allergic to pesticides.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Ruth, I think we can't let you go in the position where you know, some people might suggest you rule the world of food in America almost as much as Martha Stewart does. if we didn't get you to tell us about some of your favorite new places to dine, anywhere in the world, because on the menu, listeners are tuning in from everywhere. So where are some places that are at the top of your list right now, things you're really excited about?
Well, I'm here in New York, I'm really excited by the food of David Chang, uh-huh. who has a restaurant. He has a few restaurants. One's Momofuku, and
you
and
can't
one.
Get into. To, well,
oh well, he has a little 12-seat one.
Yeah,
but the regular Momofuku
yeah,
you can
we were
get
there.
Into.
We were there. Yeah.
And sambar, and I love this food, and I think it sort of points to the fact that I think, you know, one of the next, he is Korean-American, and his food is sort of inflected with this Korean aesthetic, and I think Korean food is going to come into its own internationally. People are going to start discovering that this is a really exciting cuisine that has, for reasons I don't understand, been totally overlooked.
People said that regional Indian food was going to be the next big wave, but I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I guess the tip for listeners is go early and go at lunchtime to Momofuku. That's exactly what we did, and we were able to get in. Otherwise, it's rather frustrating because there's nowhere exactly around the corner that you can go.
Exactly. But, the food is just, you know, inventive and exciting, and it's sort of where restaurants are right now, which is very casual. You're sitting at a counter, basically.
Now, if you want Ruth's input on Paris, she just published it, so all you have to do is get on the website or buy a magazine. But what about another corner of the world?
Well, I just have to say, in Paris, I mean, one of the this restaurant La Maison, I just loved. I mean, the food was boisterous and exciting, and you feel like you're, you know, in the beating heart of Paris.
That's what we love, yeah.
And the duck just the flavor just resonates in your mouth, goes on and on and on. In London, I am a huge fan of Fergus Henderson's food.
We had him do it. We were at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival.
I did an interview with him. I tell you what, he is one brave man. I mean, he got up and did a cooking demonstration, subsequently I interviewed him, and he's struggling with a health issue which he doesn't even talk about, and it's just amazing.
And his food is simple, straightforward, from the earth. You know, he's known for his marrow salad, but I had the best asparagus I've ever had in my life there.
Oh, really?
And just, you know, very simple, but these perfect, perfectly cooked, you know, just picked asparagus. And that is just, it's thrilling to eat food that just, you know, tastes of the earth.
Right. No, I had his roasted pig's tail, and I can honestly say that one of those in my whole lifetime was enough.
and unfortunately, he was also presenting a dish of pig's head, and there was a half a pig's head on every table, and I'm afraid the kitchen at the hotel where the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival was didn't really have much of a clue as to how to cook pig's heads, so it came out looking rather underdone and not very attractive at all, and nobody at our table ate any.
I was in Melbourne a few months ago, and I loved the food in Australia.
We lived in Australia in the 70s, and believe me, you would not have loved the food there. It was English hotel food or stuffy French. That was it.
But now it's absolutely
now
terrific.
Now it's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, I loved Melbourne. I loved the people there.
Well, we lived just a little bit south of Melbourne.
Yeah, in a region that didn't even grow grapes when I lived there, and now they have some of the best wines in the world coming out of vineyards that are right next to the golf course.
What restaurants did you hit in Melbourne, Ruth?
I
always forget things too.
The wonderful new Greek restaurant. The place
those Greek guys. We actually never got there.
we
want to go to Greece.
Yeah, we had a little bit of problem with that. Isn't it called the Press Club?
Yes, it is called the Press Club.
Yeah. We had a little bit of difficulty because the owner was kind of tied up. But the place we absolutely love to put down on your list for next time you go is Donovan's. Donovan's right on the back of the beach in St Kilda, and Gail is a major health problem recovery person, and her husband, curiously enough, was born in the United States, and they both were in the hotel business, and now they run this absolutely wonderful restaurant. Call, and if you want the website, it's eatatdonovans.com.
Oh, well, that's
gives you an idea of what they have in mind.
And she has did a wonderful book called How to Walk a Dog in Italy. Anyhow, we're moving into another phase of this discussion, this conversation with you. I appreciate the time you've given us, and I loved talking to you.
This has been really fun.
Oh, well.
please come back and see us when you have some more interesting subjects that you'd like to talk to us about, and I know our listeners will be fascinated.
Well, I think she already came up with a title for a new book, We've Got to Learn to Eat Little Fishes.
We do.
Anyhow, thanks, Ruth.
Thank you.
And good luck with your progress.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.